We discussed in the last mitzvah that there is a prohibition to substitute one animal for another that is designated as a korban. So if you say you have an animal and you say this is, should be an ola, and then whoops, you change your minds, then you have a different animal and you say, I would like to substitute this animal instead of that one. So that's not allowed, and that's what was discussed in the last mitzvah. So now we're discussing mitzvah Shin Nun Beis 352. Mitzvahs ha-meimir be'amas korban ve'veheima acheres shetiyena shtehen kodesh. That there's a positive mitzvah that's it's correlated to the previous mitzvah, which is that if you do such a thing, that you say, I'm substituting this animal for that animal, so not only does it not work, but both of them become holy. Both of them become consecrated as korbanos. Lios hatemura kodesh. So the animal that the substitute animal should be holy. Kilomer hamemir bemas korbanu bevehim acheres gon shiomer lo zoti yela korban tumura zo. If you say this animal should be a korban instead of that, shetiyena hi utmu vehatemura shtein kodesh. They should both be holy. Shenemar vayahu smura so yeh kodesh. They should both be holy. This is a mitzvah sasei, a positive commandment. Kolmar shetetzavus anu haTorah lios hatmura kedusha velinhog kedusha kodesh b'shtein. That they should both be holy. And again, you didn't get to substitute. Not only did you not get to substitute, but now you're out two animals instead of just one animal. V'arayish is a mitzvah sasei. He amram zichron lebracha maseches tmura b'minyan meimir loasi asei v'akar terei. Love. So you might think that you don't get malchus for doing tamura, because there's it's nitak lase, that it's connected to a positive commandment, that you're not allowed to do a substitution. So if you make the substitution, then the has a rectification attached to it, which is that they both become holy. So the Gemara suggests the possibility that you shouldn't receive the penalty for Malchus for doing Tamura, because there's a rectification involved. And in any mitzvah where there is a mitzvah, say, a positive commandment that's correlated to the negative commandment, you don't see the penalty of lashes. So the Gemara rejects that by saying, Lo ase ase v'akar tre lave, that in one mitzvah ase cannot undo two negative commandments. So while it might not technically be counted as two negative commandments in the minyan mitzvahs, in the counting of the 613 mitzvahs, nevertheless, since it says, lo yachalifenu velo yamirozo, since the Torah expresses itself doubly, since the Torah expresses itself as you shouldn't switch it and you shouldn't substitute it, since it uses those two terminologies, so then just this one positive commandment that both animals should be holy cannot undermine the severity of the two negative commandments. It was only if it were only one negative commandment that it could potentially cancel it out. So that's why the Torah, the Gemara clearly says that this is a mitzvah zaseh, that the requirement to treat both animals as holy is a positive commandment that should be counted in the 613 mitzvot. Just explained. So it's clear from the Gemara that this is a mitzvah sasei. This is a positive commandment, and one we counted in the minyan mitzvos, but it does not have the power to rectify the two negative commandments. Mishor sheha mitzvah, what is the reasoning for this positive commandment? Shirat Hashem Baruch Hu lahatil mora b'lei b'nei adam b'chol in yanei hakodesh, that God wanted us to take very seriously and to be very nervous about all aspects of korbanos, of animals consecrated to the base of anything consecrated to the base of Mikdash. So that's why God gave specific instructions about how the Beis HaMikdash and the vessels are supposed to be constructed, because they're supposed to impose a certain feeling on those who view it and experience it. And the same thing in any animals that are treated as sanctified to the Beis HaMikdash, so you're supposed to treat them in a very serious manner. So how important it is to treat holy things very seriously. V'ken kedei likbor v'libeinu moras inyan hakodesh tziva hakosuv leval neshaneh hadvarim. So this is the reason for the mitzvah of tmura. Mitzvah's governing tmura, which is that you shouldn't just willy-nilly just, you know, you had an animal that you sanctified as a korban. Okay, you don't feel like having this animal sanctified as a korban anymore. Oh, just replace it. There's no real difference with a second animal. Just replace it. So you shouldn't treat it with such lightness as to do that, but rather you should make sure that not to change it, and to treat it as something that is not subject to your intervention anymore. Yeah.
Now, if it turns out that people were sort of discouraged from donating korbanos to the Beis Hamikdash, what happens if the Beis Hamikdash runs short on korbanos? What do? They buy them?
Well, they're never going to run short on the required korbanos, because the required korbanos, like the two daily tmidim, are purchased from the tax, the shkalim, that are levied every year on the Jewish people as a whole. So they're not going to run out of required korbanos, and the voluntary korbanos, it doesn't matter if people bring it or not. And if there's an obligatory korban, so it's not subject to your will. You just have to, like, after certain events, you have to bring a todah or whatever, a chatas, whatever. So then it's not shayach that they would run out. Ela mikevan jineskacha behema tia bigdushasa leolam velo nachshov lafkia bigdushasa lachlifa behema chera. So it's going to be holy forever. I mean, there are ways to redeem it, but to just switch it with another animal is too quick, to treating it too lightly. That your thought and your desire in this matter should be completely undermined and overturned. And see what happens, see what you did? They're actually both going to be holy. You thought you wanted to replace it, they're actually both going to be holy, which is kihu ba b'masav lafkia hakedusha. So you, when you're coming and you're saying, hey, I'm replacing this animal with this animal, so you want to undermine the sanctity of the first animal. That really the sanctification is just going to, you know, creep on anything else. And you thought you were going to undermine it. It's actually going to spread more. It's kind of like the imagery of, you know, the tzfardea, you know, in the medrash that talks about how the pasuk says about tal hatzfardea, that it uses the singular, that the frog... Well, obviously, what the Pashup Shad, what it means is that frog means as a collective noun, that it means the collection of frogs, but the Medrash interprets it as saying, as meaning, that originally there was just one frog, and the Mitzrayim thought, hey, you know, what's gonna, we don't want this frog, so they took a club and they whacked it, and every time they would whack the frog, it split into two. Just kept, you thought you wanna get rid of it, really it's just gonna keep spreading and spreading and spreading. So, and then they, of course, the two frogs that produced, they wanted to kill those frogs, so they whacked it with a baseball bat again, and it split into two, and it became, now they have four frogs, and then they kept multiplying like that. So basically, the idea is that God is saying, hey, you're trying to undermine my holiness? I'm showing you that you're not only going to undermine it, but rather it's going to grow, and it's going to become even a bigger problem, so to speak, for you, rather than you undermining it. So fine. So Harambam Zichron of the Bracha Kosta Betam Mitzvazo V'Masha Nitzavinu Losiv Chomesh V'Pidyon Hakodesh. So when you redeem something that's holy, you would generally have to add 1/5 of the value. So it's not what we think of in math today as 1/5 of the value. It's what we think of in math today as 1/4 of the value, meaning that it's going to be 1/5 once the percentage is added on. So let's say the item is worth $100, so you'll have to redeem it for $125. So it's a fifth of, you added on a fifth of $125, but within the $100, so it's called, we would call it a quarter. So you have to add a fifth, provided the coin that you use to redeem belongs to you, and the hekdesh belongs to you. If you redeem the hekdesh of someone else, or use a coin of someone else, then you don't have to add the fifth, which is an interesting quirk of the rules, which comes into play nowadays mostly with Maaser Sheni. That's what we really think about this. So Maaser Sheni, if you live in Eretz Yisrael and you are tithing your produce, so one of the tithes that you have to remove is called Maaser Sheni. That then the first and second and fourth and fifth years of the Shemitah cycle, so you have to take a tenth of your produce and eat it in Yerushalayim. So nowadays we don't do that because there's no Mizbeach, so you don't need Maaser Sheni in Yerushalayim, but so you have to redeem the Maaser Sheni, and it's subject to this rule. So that's what everyone does in Eretz Yisrael. They separate the Maaser Sheni. They say, well, a tenth of the produce on the southern side of the produce, say, is going to be Maaser Sheni, and I want it to be redeemed on the coin that I have at home that I specifically designated for the redemption of Maaser Sheni. So if you're doing your Maaser Sheni and the car, you own the coin as well, so you have to add a chomesh, you have to add a fifth of the value on the coin. So practically speaking, nowadays it doesn't really matter because we don't redeem the Maaser Sheni with the actual value. We redeem a Maaser Sheni only with the Shavet Pruta. So you redeem the, even if you have $10,000 worth of Maaser Sheni, so you use a very small amount of money to redeem the entire Maaser Sheni. So the only difference really is when you're saying the Nusach of the Maaseres, when you're going through the text, you're supposed to say, to separate the tithes, you say, Maaser Sheni is on the southern side of the produce, and I want it and its fifth of its value to be redeemed on one pruta that's found in the... some say it doesn't work. Some people actually say that you should, that the fifth doesn't work for that, so you have to actually redeem it on a pruta and a quarter. A quarter of a pruta and the... but practically speaking, there's very little difference, because normally you keep a coin that's a 10-shekel coin, and it has a lot of prutas in it, so you use it for a few times in Maaser and Maaser Sheni, and then you empty that coin, and you keep going. So that's generally how it works, but you have to add the chomesh if you're Maasering, if it's your coin and your Maaser Sheni. But if you're doing your friend a favor, and your friend says, hey, ooh, I don't have a coin to do Maaser Sheni right now, can you redeem my Maaser Sheni on your coin? So then you just say, hey, I want Fred's Maaser Sheni to be redeemed on a pruta on my coin. And you don't have to say the chomesh. You don't have to add the chomesh because both the coin and the Maaser Sheni don't belong to you. Okay, fine. So that's the Rambam says that this same reasoning applies, that you don't want to treat kodshim lightly, holy things lightly, when you redeem holy things as well. Sheyarda haTorah, that's why you have to add a chomesh. Sheyarda haTorah sof machsheves adam v'yitzra ra. The Torah says how bad people really are. He knows how bad people really are. Shetivo laharbos kinyana v'lochus al mamono, that people are very concerned about the preservation of their property. They don't want to lose money and they don't want to lose their property. That's one of their number one priorities in life. So you're going to be like, oh, why did I do that? Why did I pledge all that to the Beis HaMikdash? I changed my mind. Okay, I want to redeem it. So the Torah says that you have to add a chomesh to penalize you for treating this lightly and for being more concerned about your own... I mean, maybe there'll be a situation where you have more legitimate reasons to redeem it, but in general, the Torah wanted to give you the idea that it's not a good idea to be more concerned about your own financial loss than for the pledge that you made to the Beis HaMikdash. That's why you have to add extra when you redeem it. Uchmochein yachlif behema sheikdesh bepchusa mimena im yuten lo reshus lahachlif ra betov yachlif tov bera. So the Rambam says that one of the reasons for Tamura, the prohibition of Tamura, is that fundamentally God would be not so mind so much if you replaced an icky, thin, not so good looking animal as a korban with a nice, fat, healthy animal for a korban. But God knew that if he gave permission to improve on your previous selection, so then you might eventually decide, hey, well, if I'm allowed to switch, so maybe I have this nice fat animal, and I'm just imagining already the steak on my plate that's coming from this fat delicious animal. And God doesn't need the fat delicious animal, so I'm going to give him the Beis HaMikdash as a korban, this thin runt that I have in my stables, corral. So for that reason, because it was a slippery slope that you might eventually, trade the other way, that you might replace a good animal with a bad animal. So the Torah slammed the door in your face, proverbially, and it says no switching at all, because he knew that people's inclinations would eventually be to switch out a good animal for a bad one.
The whole principle is
not in the Kodesh. Yeah, but the point is not everybody would stick to that in their personal choices. Yeah, right. Okay.
How many of these principles are extend now nowadays to if you make a pledge to halak to a tzedakah? For example, or...
Well, that's not undoable.
If you say
Bli Neder, okay, so then it is undoable, but but if you absolutely designate certain monies for tzedakah, so then there's nothing to be done. You have to give it. Mm-hmm. I mean, for money, there's no switching. There's no such thing as better money and worse money.
Yeah.
All right.
Well, it's dirty money.
Okay, fine, but halachically speaking. But Malin Bakodesh Lo Moridin, yeah, that's a general principle, but you have it doesn't always apply that you do more, like the famous sheet of Beis Shammai for lighting Hanukkah candles. That Beis Shammai holds that you light one less Hanukkah candle each night. So that's one of the reasons that Beis Hill disagrees with Beis Shammai, is because they apply here the principle of Malin Bekodesh Lo Marid. But it doesn't mean that you never do less in Halacha, because Beis Shammai held that he had better reasons. He had reasons that trump Malin Bekodesh Velo Maridin. So that's why Beis Shammai said that you light one less Hanukkah candle per night. So, but that is the general principle, that you're not supposed to go on to lesser level of holiness once you get to a higher level of holiness. Supposed to, like, if you move to Eretz Yisrael, you're not supposed to move back to Chutz Laretz, unless you have a really good reason. But even then, okay. So even then, if you can't find Parnasa in Eretz Yisrael, or you can't find the Shidduch in Eretz Yisrael, or the different things, so then you're allowed to move back to Chutz Laretz. Okay. Ve'od herech ben yinzeh v'chasal v'shikol chukei ha-torek zeros hen rayat al-izbonin bohen v'chol shata yochol iten bo tam tein. So the Rambam says that we know that the laws of the Torah are fundamentally non-understandable. They're beyond our comprehension. But nevertheless, whatever we can do to help us get some idea of what's going on, tiny beginning glimpses of understanding, so we should, it's a good idea to start to do that. So the Sefer Chinuch says, I have a hard work. I have to come up with Shorshei HaMitzvah for every single mitzvah in the Torah. So sometimes it's really hard. So it's nice that the Rambam helps me occasionally by presenting his own Shorshei HaMitzvah of potential beginnings of understanding of the reasoning behind the mitzvos. Midine HaMitzvah, the laws are as follows. Masham HaZichron LeBracha, HaMeimer BeKilayim O BeTreifa. So if you have a nice animal that's good as a korban in the Beis HaMikdash, that would absolutely be acceptable as a korban, and you say, hey, I'm not interested in this animal anymore, I want to switch it with animal B. I want to replace animal A with animal B. So animal B happens to be an animal that is pasul as a korban. So that tamura does not work. That's as if you said nothing. You don't get lashes, you don't get, the second animal does not absorb the kedusha because it can't be offered as a korban anyway. So what are examples of an animal that is pasul as a korban? A animal that's the product of a crossbreed that's not that cannot be brought as a Beis HaMikdash, or an animal that has a blemish that would render it a treifa, or a C-section. An animal that was born by cesarean section is pusel as a korban. A kisi volate or something like that.
Oh, so it has to be actually born.
Actually born in the natural manner. Okay. So this is one of the, when we were discussing the mumen, the various blemishes of korbanos versus the mumen of kohanim. So some of them are the same, but some of them are different. So one of the ones that are different is that an animal that was born by C-section is pasul as a korban, but a kohen that was born by C-section is allowed to worship in the Beis HaMikdash as a kohen. Well, there's no purim ben for a kohen anyway, so for a kohen it doesn't matter. Right, but that's true. That's true. And there's no pinyon ben if the child is born by C-section. That's why if you want to make sure to have a pinyon ben, if you and your wife are technically eligible to have one, so the U.S. is not necessarily the best place to have a baby because of the C-section rate
in the U.S. is approximately 30%.
As much as
and
that.
In major medical hospitals, so it's going to be even higher. I think in Colombia, the rate is like 40% because they have all these fancy doctors who want to try all their lovely techniques and try to whatever. Okay, fine. So that's in other countries, it's much lower. The actual rate of C-sections that's medically necessary, there are different estimates. But the range of estimates of C-sections that are actually medically necessary are between 2 and 10%. Mm-hmm. Those are the different estimates I've seen. Mm-hmm. So that means...
A lot of it is scheduling.
That's a major problem also. You see that in the U.S. there we're doing at least three times as many C-sections as are actually necessary, which is a major problem. In Brazil, actually... bigger problem is scheduling. Let's see, the C-section rate in Brazil is like something crazy. Because not because of medical, not because the doctors are quick to do them, but because the women want the delivery at a certain date, and they want
cosmetic issues or something like that.
I mean, maybe the cow wouldn't be able to give birth anymore. I don't think that would necessarily die. I mean, the Mishnah talks about for humans. The Mishnah talks about a Yotzi Dofin, about a C-section, and it makes clear that the mother survives. Yeah. It even talks about Vibak. It says that if a woman gives birth by the Mishnah, there's a disagreement amongst the Tanoim that what about a Vibak? What if a woman gives birth to a boy by C-section? And then later, the next time, gives birth regularly to a boy. So does the second boy have a pidyon ben or not? So we paskin not, but there is a shita in the Tanaim that he does have a pidyon ben. So you see that they were definitely that women in those times. Right. So they were definitely. It might have been very rare, but it was a case that was discussed of a woman who definitely survived the C-section.
Obviously, animals did have C-sections because
it's very surprising to me because again, the veterinarians in 20th century haven't started doing C-sections until 1930s, 1940s, and for the women also the C-section was something which was. I mean, obviously, it comes from cesarean, comes from Caesar because of all this,
right.
Whatever. But in reality, I mean, there was so little antiseptic that survive a major surgery. Even if you do,
right? Certainly, not everyone survived. Right. I'm sure many people
not survive a childbirth either, right?
Right.
I would kind of. I mean, the Torah just describes it, but I'm kind of very surprised because I'm sure that. It was something extremely, extremely rare.
Oh, that could very well be, but...
I've heard these days C-section is performed especially in order for the attempt to avoid liability after a child is born,
yes.
That the child might have suffered because the delivery was taking longer and as a result certain ailments or certain cognitive impairments might have happened, and doctors.
Right, they do it to avoid being sued. They say, "Look, we did everything we could," but it's not. It causes a lot of problems. It's not. Besides the lack of pidyon haben, causes definitely something that should be avoided, if not absolutely medically necessary, in the 2 to 10% of cases where it is. Okay. Fine. So also an animal that is of uncertain gender or has both male and female organs is also possible as a korban. So if you use any of these types of animals as a replacement, as the tmura animal, then it's as if you said nothing and don't worry about it. It's as if you designated the substitute as a korban a donkey or a camel. So obviously that cannot be brought as a korban, and I have kosher animals. So it's as if it's just nothing. It's impossible to offer a korban from these species, so therefore it's nothing. Lefikach ein oloka, so you don't receive the penalty of lashes. But if you designate a blemished animal as the substitute, then you do receive the penalty of lashes because at least it's of the species that could be designated as a korban. Correct. Umasha amru she'ein ada meimer behemto bekorban she'eino shelo. So they both have to belong to you in order to make tamura. Valim amar bala korban kolarotze lahamir yamir meimer bakol adam. But if you have an animal that you designate as a korban, you make an announcement, hey, anyone who wants to come do tmura, be my guest.
come do tmura. So if he does that, so then a second person comes and says, hey, I want to switch my cow for your cow. That is an effective tmura, and the second guy would receive the penalty of lashes, and the animal would absorb the holiness of the tmura. If you switch cattle for a sheep or goat or vice versa, kvasim beizim or izim kvasim, or sheep for goats and goats for sheep, onikevos uzcharim uzcharim onikevos, or males for females, females for males, or sheimir behema achas bemeya or meya beachas. You receive, if you switch 100 for one and 200 for or vice versa. Bein bevas achas, bein bezoach arzo harelu tmura. So this is tmura, whether it's at the same time or at different times. Veloke kecheshbon habehemos shehemir. You receive malkos according to the number of behemos in the second group. So if you say, hey, I want to switch my cow for 500 sheep. So you receive the penalty of lashes 500 times.
It's kind of strange. Because
why?
Well, first of all, nobody would survive this, and secondly,
so you don't die with a malchus. Yeah. We'll get there when we discuss the parsha Kiyosetze. So you have to be, you don't get more malchus than you can survive. It's sort of like, you know, a 300-year sentence in prison. So there's no, obviously you're not going to actually serve in prison for 300 years. So you serve, it's basically a life sentence. So even if you are determined to receive 500 sets of malchus, but you can only actually survive six, then you only get six.
I mean, it would be reasonable to suppose that in good part this system is also set up to this way to try to lessen people's attitude about trying to switch. When you decide to do something, you have to give it a serious thought and intention, and do it on that basis rather than to do it, in a Hefkerveld sort of way.
Yes, 100%. It's also part of the divine punishment. Even if you don't receive, you know, all the malchus that you really deserve here in this world, because you might die, so in Olam Haba, maybe you'll receive the rest of the malchus that you deserve. Okay? I don't know exactly how it works, but it's part of the severity of the divine punishment as well. Veina tmura osa tmura, but if you replace the animal and then you want to replace the replacement, that doesn't work. The lo vlad behemes hegdesh osa tmura, and you can also not make tmura if you have an animal that was holy and it gave birth. It was designated a korban and this animal gave birth, so that the baby animal is holy. But if you replace that animal, then that doesn't work. There's no tmura. Shneamar v'hayahu tmura so yiyakodesh v'diktigu zeron bracha ima perish mekubal hu v'lo vlado. It has to be the original animal and its replacement, but not the offspring of that animal. Usmuraso v'lo tmuras tmuraso. It's only one set of switching that works, but you cannot, once an animal is a tmura, you cannot now again make a tmura regarding that animal. But for the original animal, you can make tmura with that animal as many times as you want and receive the penalty of lashes accordingly, the number. The only inyan of tmura is by land animals. Again, there are only three types of land animals that can be brought as a korban: cattle, sheep, and goats. And the tmura is only regarding them. But if you designated a bird as a korban, there's no tmura. And if you designated flour for use in a mincha, in a flour offering, that also is ineffective.
Ve'in kodshe goyim osim tmura min ha-Torah, val mid-rabbanan goy sheheimer mumer. That min ha-Torah, if a non-Jew designates a korban and says, hey, you know, I'm not doing tmura, so that's ineffective. The tmura is only a Jewish problem. But midrabanan, a goy who does such a thing, the second behema would receive the kedusha of tmura. V'akol memirin, anyone can do tmura. Not that they're allowed, but that if they do tmura, that the penalty and the resulting kedusha would ensue. Echad anoshim, men and women, see? Equal opportunity. V'lo she'adam Rashi l'hamir alashim heimir mumar v'sof eges arbam. Not that you're allowed, but if you do it, then you receive the penalty of lashes. U'mashamru keitza din atmura likarev. How do you offer the korban? That is tmura. So sometimes it's exactly the same way as the original korban. Sometimes there are slight modifications depending on many different dinim. V'din v'ladoseha uvalde v'lado. So what happens if the tmura now has a baby? Okay, that's how you offer that as a korban. So there are a lot of, several chapters in the Rambam that discuss this, a lot of details. V'yaser pratem ivarm b'maseches tmura. It's all explained in maseches tmura. V'noheges b'chol makom u'v'chol zman b'zchar munikevos. V'olver alea v'heimir v'lo noa kidusha b'shtei abeimos k'lomar b'rishono v'tmurasa b'itel aseye. And it's in all places and all times, in males and females. Again, you're not supposed to do it, especially, I'm not supposed to do it at all, but especially nowadays it creates problems because you can't actually offer the korban in the base of Mikdash. So if you violate this and you don't consider the second one holy, then you were neglected to perform this positive commandment. And of course, in addition to any other penalty of treating a sanctified animal improperly. Mitzvah shinun gimel, mitzvahs mayrich behema, sheyitein kefi sheyarichena hakoin. So let's say you pledge the value of an animal to the Beis HaMikdash. So you have to give to the Beis HaMikdash according to the value that the Kohen will designate for it. Ladun bedin erke behema, kemo shetzivasnu haTorah alav. So in contrast to the arochin of a person, so the arochin of people are given explicitly in the Chumash, and it goes totally by age and gender, and it's a fixed price. It doesn't go by how much this person would actually be worth, would he or she to be sold. But by the animal, the Erech goes according to how much the animal is actually worth. You have to stand up the animal before the Kohen, and he will shall value it. You have to give according to the value that the Kohen will tell, say it has. So you're not allowed to understate the value and to lie, especially when dealing with animals that one is giving to God. Obviously, even when you're dealing with fellow human beings, you're not allowed to lie and cheat. But it's particularly grievous to a certain extent when you're attempting to cheat God, because God is uncheatable. And of course, the basic severity of dealing with divine interactions. So the same thing, that you have to make sure to treat stuff that's given to the Beis HaMikdash properly. So if you sanctify an animal as a korban, but then it has a mum, so then this you have to redeem it based on the value that's stated by the Kohen. And instead of that, you bring a different animal as a korban. So if it's if you sanctify a non kosher animal, not as a korban, but for its value to the Beis HaMikdash, so the Kohen has to state the value. So it doesn't literally mean a non kosher animal, that's what you think it would mean, but it means an animal that could be offered as a korban but develops a mum. So that's what you have to give the value to the Beis HaMikdash based on the ha'aracha, the valuation of the Kohen. Uvein shigdish adam behima Torah l'mizbech v'nafu ba'mum. Kimo sha'amarnu. Ot me'a lebedek habayis. I mean, it also applies according to the way that, with simple reading of the pasuk, that if you designate a non-kosher animal to the temple treasury in terms of its value, so either way, tzricha ha'amada lifnei ha'kohen, it has to be brought to the Kohen, and the Kohen tells you its value. Sh'ne'amar v'aminas ha'beima lifnei ha'kohen, v'hu ma'arich osa. So you bring the animal to the Kohen, and the Kohen tells you its value. The mesa kodem she'te'orech v'tipada, ein ma'arichin v'lo podin osa achar she'mesa. So if it dies, so you don't do this procedure after it's dead, because it says v'hamidas ha'beima lifnei Hashem. You must stand the animal up before the Kohen, which means the animal has to be able to stand. But if it's dead, so it can't stand. I mean, you could
hold it up, I guess, but has to be able to stand of its own accord.
The Lashon V'nofal b'mum refers to the idea that it develops a mum after it was given, after it was designated to be given as a korban?
Correct.
Okay.
Yeah. Fine. Va'im shachad ba shnayim or rosh shnayim afal pi shekimesa le'inyan shchita k'dekai molan shekein nitztavinu nitztava Moshe al rov achas ba echad ba ofer rosh shnayim v'heima rei kechaya le'inyan arachin. So, but if it's shechted, if the behemoth was shechted and it's still alive, so you have a small window of opportunity where you can still get the Erech from the Kohen. Because for Arachin, it's still considered alive.
Wait, so
normally, for Alacha, it's considered dead, but for this area, it's considered alive.
So who shechted it? I mean, does the person allow to shecht animal that he designated to a Kohen?
No, but if you did.
Then, okay, so this is the way to get out of the dedication that you...
Or if it's for Bedek HaBayis, so if it's just for the temple treasury, so then you could, I guess, you could bring the coin into the slaughterhouse and say, quick, okay, shechted, now tell me how much it's worth, and then it's redeemed, okay? Okay?
But it will be evaluated as meat, in other words, once it's shechted.
I'm still alive, but it's still...
Right, so you're not allowed... just so we don't get a wrong impression, after an animal has been shechted, it's considered like dead for certain purposes, but you're not actually allowed to eat it until it dies.
Right.
Oh, okay.
You're not allowed to start munching on the animal when it's been shechted while it's still actually alive. That you're not allowed. But there's an interesting dichotomy here, where since Goyim don't have the laws of Shechita, so for them, Shechita is irrelevant. So, let's say you shecht an animal and then you cut a piece off. So, for a Jew, after the now it's kosher, it's been shechted. So you cut a piece off the animal and you wait till the animal dies and you're now allowed to eat it. But for a non-Jew, it is not relevant shechita, that's considered aver min achai. That's considered a piece of meat from a live animal because the animal, the mice of the animal is still alive and it was removed from the animal while it was before it was dead.
But how long is it going to be between being shechted and being dying? 5 seconds?
Hopefully, yes. So lechatchila. Right, so lechatchila...
Is it
both
brain death or...
yeah.
So lechatchila, both for birds and for animals, you're supposed to sever the entire trachea and the esophagus, in which case it's going to die pretty quickly. But especially for birds, so you only have to shecht one, technically speaking. You have to shecht either the trachea or the esophagus. So if you don't do it 100% lechatchila and you just shecht the trachea, for example, you 100% kosher shechita, you slice clean through the trachea of a bird, so it can live for a while.
Yeah. I mean, I used to go, my mother used to send me with the bird that she used to buy on Thursday at the market,
yeah,
and I would take it to the shechita to get it done, and I saw it being done, and it takes some time until the bird actually is not running around and moving, even after shechting.
Yeah, so... If you do it the 100% lechatchila way, so it's going to die much faster. But
yeah.
I mean, it doesn't mean I'm not talking about eating.
No.
You know, if you just shecht the one simen, it's 100% mutter to eat. I'm saying it's the halacha on the shochet, the lechatchila shochet is supposed to execute the shechita a certain way.
In our tradition, is it permissible to eat raw meat or raw bird?
Yes.
It is?
Steak tartare.
Sure.
Yes. You're allowed to eat raw meat.
Has to be soaked and salted, though, so that's going to take a while.
Oh, that's according to the Rambam. We know that the Rambam has a much more stringent approach to the laws of Malicha than all the other Rishonim. That the Rambam holds that if you want to eat meat raw, you have to soak it and salt it. And if you want to cook meat, you have to soak it and salt it, and then drop it into a liquid that's at a rolling boil.
And we mean steak? You can't broil it?
Oh, no, broiling is a different story. Of course, there's also the option of broiling or roasting the meat to remove the blood. But you, according to the Rambam, it's ma'amish adas yachid. Basically, only the Rambam holds this opinion amongst all the Rishonim, that you have to drop meat that's been soaked in salt, that even that's not good enough stam to cook the meat. You would need to immerse it in boiling water, and then you only afterwards, because you cook it how you want it.
For how long?
Briefly.
The boiling water is supposed to help take out the blood? Or something?
It doesn't take out the blood. It seals the surface of the meat so that the blood that's inside, that's halachically problematic, can no longer come out.
Juicing your steak.
Like blanching.
Put it in a duck press and really go.
That's what the Rambam holds. Of course, we hold, all the other Rishonim hold, that, can't say all, but of course, the vast majority, and this certainly our practice, is that we go down from the Rambam one level. That if you want to cook meat, only soaking and salting is necessary, and then you can do whatever you want with it. You can put it at whatever temperature you want. You could put it in the pot while the pot is heating up. You could do whatever you want. But if you want to eat raw meat, so it requires no soaking and salting whatsoever.
Really? Why?
Really?
Right, because no blood will be leave the meat. The point is that you need the soaking and salting to remove the blood that's absorbed in the meat before cooking it, because when during the cooking process, the meat will exude its juices and will get mixed in with the rest of the stuff, and that'll be no good. So part of the juices inside the meat is blood before the soaking and salting. But if you don't cook it and the meat is raw, so the blood that's absorbed inside the meat is not a problem because it's not traveling anywhere else. So, again, good luck finding meat nowadays that's not soaked and salted. But in theory, if you want to have steak tartare that is not soaked and salted, then that it would be permissible. Again, we're all machmir according to the Rambam. If you go to a restaurant and you order steak tartare, it's going to be according to the Rambam because it's going to have been soaked and salted already. But according to the way we hold the halacha, that would absolutely not be necessary. And you could go to the slaughterhouse, ask for a nice piece of meat, pre-soaking and salting, grind it yourself, and munch away.
I didn't realize I was asking such a critical question.
No, it's a good question. It's a good question. So that's, so there are people who have problems with their sodium. They need to restrict their sodium intake. So, again, you might take a little bit of work to get your hands on meat that has not been soaked and salted, but if you cannot handle the extra salt, so you have two options. One is to eat it raw.
One not to eat meat.
Or not eat meat, right? One is to eat it raw, and one is to eat it broiled, as opposed to salted. There's a story.
Oh, wait, nowadays, since they soak and salt the entire huge side of beef or something like that, inside of it, it's not going to be very much salt. Is that a problem?
Right. No, halachically, it's not a problem. I mean, we mentioned the sheet before, that there are Rishonim that hold that you need to salt every cut surface of the meat. But we don't hold like that. We hold that you can salt a huge, gigantic piece of meat, and that fixes it entirely. You can cut it into as many pieces as you want. It would not need to be resalted. According to some sheetahs, if you cut a whole side of meat, and then you cut out a steak from that side of meat, so you would need to resalt it because not all the surfaces of the meat had salt touching them. We don't go like that.
Yeah, no, by the way, the reason that, in fact, that the old days, the butchers would not, soak and salt meat is because, they sell all the blood.
Uh-huh. It makes it heavier.
Meat prices, right? Uh-huh. Right. It doesn't lose weight. So.
Right. Mm.
But I think when meat...
Well, they also used to, throw it, you have the feet and the head of the chickens used to always be included in the old days, too.
Because
and a lot of the feathers.
By the pound. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, right.
The feathers don't weigh that much, but
well,
the
if you bought a chicken,
yeah, the hairy chickens, yeah.
Mm-hmm. You at least you get a little thing with the giblets and the
feathers of a chicken are burned off before
the
gizzard and
not of course chicken.
And now you don't get it anymore.
The liver,
you can't burn off.
You don't get it anymore.
After the soaking and salting,
you can't burn off. You can't use heat to to take out to get rid of
after the soaking and salting.
You can.
Yeah. Okay. Before the salting is a problem because it's like cooking the meat before salting it. But the that's why you in
after
the
all the feathers of a chicken are burned off. Removed. There are tiny little hairs that chicken remain, and right. that usually gets burned off.
It would have to be after the salting. Can't be before the salting.
Yeah, otherwise it's cooking it,
Yeah.
No, that's actually the problem. Also, because the other thing, a commercial, most processes for getting rid of all these things use hot water too, which you can't do.
Right, in a goyish slaughterhouse, that's why the chickens... That's what they tell me, that non-kosher chickens are much cleaner than kosher chickens because they immerse the chickens in hot water and that loosens the feathers, and then they have special plucking machines. It's very easy for them to pluck all the feathers. But for kosher chickens, so you can't do that because you can't expose them to hot water before the soaking and salting. You have to hire, basically the only way to do it is you have to hire a private shochet to shecht something for you. Because if you salt something at home, it's actually going to be a lot of times much saltier than the commercial operations. They have the specialized equipment, these huge water baths where they change water all the time, and it's going to be much less salty when it comes down to it. Yep. Yeah. So you can go back to the old way if you want. Do it at home. It applies in times of base you don't do any of these things. You can't makdish things, and you can't be marich things, and you can't be machrim things. We'll see what those are in future mitzvos. But designating things to the base of mikdash. The animal should be locked up and starved. Operos uksus v'chelim yirkavu, and these, if you designate, let's say, fruits or clothing, should just be left to rot. Avayim rotsa b'takanosa. Oh, but if you don't want to do this, as most people probably would not, Ovid lehu k'deshmuel damer hekdesh shavim mana shechilu al shavim pruta mechul al k'dekasivna. You can redeem its value on a coin, and then the animal gets to live a long, happy life, and you get to keep your clothing. And why wouldn't you do this? So if you designate something to the base of English nowadays, you wouldn't take it in front of the Kohen. That you don't take it to the Kohen to assess its value nowadays, if you, for some reason, designated an animal as for the base of English. But nevertheless, it still has effectiveness nowadays, even though you're not supposed to do it, if you would designate something to the base of Mikdash, and you would have to redeem it on a coin.